Thank you, Beck. And I would like to take a second to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we meet, the Noongar people, and pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and pay my respects to any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people in the audience today. I'm really here on behalf of ASHRM and the PrEP Guideline Panel. I'm a poor substitute for Edwina Wright, who unfortunately couldn't be here today. So you'll have to unfortunately miss out on her erudition and gracefulness and put up with me instead. So this is the PrEP Guideline Panel. Also, I'd like to acknowledge the work put into this by Zindia Nanva from ASHRM as the Secretariat. She and Edwina particularly spent many, many hours on these guidelines. The guideline review process was a lengthy one, 9 months, starting at the end of 2018. Each chapter of the guidelines was reviewed and rewritten by a small group of subject matter experts in order to update the guidelines to the latest evidence. And then each chapter was then reviewed by the broader guideline panel, and that panel comprised clinicians, researchers, as well as representatives of relevant community organisations and priority groups. So obviously, and this produced a very large document, and we really only have time today to have a brief overview of the significant changes to the guidelines compared to the previous iteration. So one of the things that's changed in the new update of the guidelines is the concept of risk stratification. So the 2019 ASHRM PrEP guidelines no longer stratify a person's HIV risk as either medium or high, and instead these have been collapsed into a sort of simplified HIV risk. And really the aim of this was to make it easier for clinicians who may not be as familiar with PrEP or with HIV risk to make it easier to navigate. As per the previous guidelines, the new guidelines still state that an individual may be suitable for PrEP if they report HIV risk in either the in the preceding and the upcoming 3 months. But a change in the guideline is that if someone does not have a previous HIV risk, so if they don't report a HIV risk in the previous 3 months, but they do foresee a HIV risk in the next 3 months, then that person is eligible for PrEP in the new guidelines. And you know, there are many different scenarios in which this may be applicable, but one scenario is someone who may not have a HIV risk in their day-to-day life, but they may go traveling to a high prevalence country, or simply for the fact that they're going traveling and they'll be on holidays and be having fun, their HIV risk may go up during that period, and hence that person is eligible for PrEP prior to going on their holidays. The new guidelines have also strengthened the previous recommendation that PrEP is available to people whose major indication is having high anxiety around HIV risk. And this does include people who may be, for example, in a monogamous, serodifferent relationship and whose partner is on treatment and has an undetectable viral load, so whose actual HIV risk may not be significant or at all there, sorry, I should say. But if that person has HIV, has anxiety around getting HIV in that situation, then PrEP may still be indicated for that person. There is, in terms of, so this, the HIV risk chapter is chapter four in the guidelines. And there is a parallel to chapter four that is written for clinicians who are knowledgeable about transgender terminology and transgender trans concepts around trans and gender diverse health. And this chapter really hopes to foreshadow a future where sexual health guidelines do not need to provide separate advice for trans and gender diverse people. And I encourage you all to look at this chapter. This is now chapter 14. The advice given in these guidelines is essentially the same as the advice given in Chapter 4, but it's just couched in different language from that in Chapter 4. So, for example, in the section for men who have sex with men, Chapter 14 discusses both anal and vaginal sex in that chapter. Because trans men who have sex with men are included in the MSM category. The 2019 guideline update also aimed to remove barriers to PrEP access. So one of the changes is that there is no longer a mention of PrEP eligibility. Instead, we talk about PrEP suitability. And people who request PrEP, the guideline recognises that people who request PrEP are typically at high risk of HIV. So the guideline clearly stipulates that if someone requests PrEP, then that person should not be dissuaded from accessing PrEP. And the guidelines make it very clear that the PrEP suitability criteria are not intended to limit or deny access to PrEP for any person who seeks PrEP, and that instead they're intended to assist clinicians in their discussions with patients around HIV risk, particularly for patients who may not be certain about whether they wish to start PrEP. The guidelines also highlight that all clinicians should routinely take a sexual history, including during consultations that may not be related to sexual risk or STIs, and that if this sexual history taking uncovers a risk for HIV, then the clinician should actively promote the uptake of PrEP. For adolescents, sorry, I'm racing through this a bit, but there's quite a bit to go through. For adolescents, the guidelines highlight that PrEP can be prescribed off-label to adolescents. Unfortunately, currently in Australia, PrEP is not on the PBS for adolescents, as you probably know, and is also not approved by the Therapeutic Goods Administration. But so the guidelines recommend that if it is found that an adolescent person needs PrEP, then clinicians should try to facilitate access to PrEP through ordering it online. The guidelines do highlight that adolescents may need more intensive support to maintain their adherence, as it's been found in the Be Prepared, or is it, no, not the Be Prepared project, one of the other ones. That's all right. One of the adolescent PrEP projects, that adherence to PrEP dropped off quite considerably in the first month after starting PrEP. So just recognising that adolescents may need increased support. And that's not unique to PrEP, obviously, that's seen across medicine, in adolescent medicine. In terms of the indications for PrEP, the guidelines highlight that the most recent epidemiological data highlight the need to strengthen the current strategies for HIV prevention in particular populations, so that includes Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, as well as overseas-born, men who have sex with men, heterosexuals, trans and gender diverse people, and adolescent men who have sex with men. And the guidelines highlight that we need increased public health efforts to try to promote uptake of PrEP in these populations. There we go. So getting to on-demand PrEP. So as Andrew pointed out, there's been a recent survey showed strong interest in on-demand PrEP among Australian PrEP users. And there was a recent WHO recommendation that on-demand PrEP should be offered to all cisgendered MSM. So the guidelines highlight that on-demand PrEP is suitable for cisgendered men who have sex with men who have a preference for this regimen, or who may have at-risk sex less than twice a week, on the proviso that they can either predict when they may have sex that puts them at risk of HIV, or that they can delay having sex by 2 hours after initiating contact. Because as you probably all know, with on-demand PrEP, the first dose needs to be taken at least 2 hours before sexual contact. The reason this recommendation is limited to cisgendered men who have sex with men is that we simply do not have sufficient evidence for effectiveness in other populations. As it says here. So these other populations for which we don't have sufficient evidence are transgender women, cisgender women, transgender men who have vaginal sex, and men who have sex with women. Obviously, if you're seeing a transgender man who exclusively has receptive anal sex, then I think it's reasonable that you can apply the evidence from obtained for cisgendered men who have sex with men. The guidelines also caution that there should be caution in recommending on-demand PrEP to adolescent cisgendered men who have sex with men. Again, because there have been no trials on on-demand PrEP in this population, and because there's concerns around adherence. And there's probably, with on-demand PrEP, there's less room for lower adherence than there is with daily PrEP. Obviously, on-demand PrEP is contraindicated in people with chronic hepatitis B infection, as tenofovir is active against hepatitis B, and using on-demand PrEP in this population might result in antiviral resistance in the hepatitis B virus. There was, again, as Andrew pointed out, there's been a change in the recommendation for initiating PrEP, as in cisgendered MSM can initiate with a double dose, 2 to 24 hours before sex. And that's both for on-demand PrEP as well as for daily PrEP, and that just brings those two PrEP methods in line with one another for that population. Again, that's only for cisgendered MSM, as we have no evidence outside of this population. And outside of that population, the recommendation is ongoing that people should start 7 days. So, as in, people should be on 7 days before they can rely on PrEP to be effective. Similarly, cessation of PrEP has been altered in that, again, to be in line with the WHO recommendations, in that cisgendered men who have sex with men who wish to stop PrEP can stop after 2 doses, so 2 further doses, or 48 hours after their last risk exposure to HIV. And again, all other PrEP users should be continue to be recommended to take PrEP for another 28 days after their last risk exposure. The guidelines also highlight that during discussions around PrEP cessation, clinicians must also highlight to patients when they may need to recommence PrEP and have a strategy in place for those patients to re-engage with PrEP if their situation changes. So those are all the recommendations, or at least the most significant changes in the recommendations. Would like to just acknowledge a broader review committee, which, as you can see, was very large and consists of really a who's who of people in HIV and PrEP. And the new guidelines are launched as of this week, 96-page document, if any of you feel you need to have a read. Available online. We are currently working on a 2-page summary of this 96-page document. which means I won't get much sleep over the next month or so. So thank you.